All right, welcome back to The Preacher in the Hat. This is episode 3. My name is Derek. Across from me is my brother Eric and my father Steve. We were talking about introductions, I guess, a little bit before this, and I think people know by now that we're twins.
Sure,
you and I are twins. Yeah. So I guess I
kind of don't. You do.
Yeah, we're no. twins, and so I've been
thinking that for a while. I think we're right.
I kind of have to wonder though, and maybe other people can help us with this. Like, how long we should be doing? How long should we keep going with the introductions? Like, at what's the episode number where people are going to hear the difference in our voices? Because I can listen back to our stuff and I can hear when it's me versus when it's you. So if you have any help with that for us, maybe some people, if you're listening, you could drop us a note on a social media page and tell us if we should keep going with the intros or not. I have no idea.
Or maybe you're listening right now and you still have idea.
Another option, I guess, would be like if you've just resigned yourself to not trying to figure it out.
They're the same anyway.
I'd be interested.
Of course, the value for a guy my age in introducing yourself is that that helps you get kick off and you remember your name for the first time. You know what I'm saying?
I'm still good on that front.
I was more thinking about the others, but
I didn't think it would be a case with you two, but maybe me.
This is funny. I was gonna bring up a quick topic of conversation we were having. A conversation with Chris one Sunday after church, Eric and I were about Chris really, really, really loves his dogs. Like he's a big time dog person. They sleep in the bed with him and all that stuff. I think
it does. Sweet.
But anyways,
most of it's not.
I think he does. I think he probably does love his dogs, but, I was kind of it kind of brought up something for me because I know I have a few stories about this. But if you have any like weird, wild animal interaction story, because I think we are going to be able to use this as a lead in for what we're going to talk about. And so that's why I wanted to kind of rehash that conversation, which was a fun conversation with Chris, by the way. If you ever get a chance to talk with Chris Sumter about his dogs, you know, and you want to hear him vent.
Well, I use it a lot of times when you talk about herding cats. That's kind of a phrase you use sometimes. Have you ever tried to herd cats? I mean, like, herd cats. It just don't work.
H-E-R-D.
H-E-R-D. Yeah, H-E-R-D. Not herd as in H-E-A-R-D, but herd cats. So when you're trying to herd cats, it's like about time you get about one of them in one spot, and here goes the other one the other way, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Cats are going to do what they're going to do, you know. So we had Thomas. We inherited Thomas at a home that we owned.
That's so weird. I think nowadays,
he
would really look down upon to leave your cat with the house.
They left the cat with the house. His name was Thomas. He was a male cat, and he was a wild thing.
So this would have been like 94.
When 94. Okay.
Yeah, it would have been about that.
Yeah, I feel like some organization would be coming after.
I know,
you.
Right?
Well, and Thomas clearly was not trained well in some respects.
Yeah.
Or maybe he tried to get away with stuff, but the thing was he was always trying to get in the house, and he was not an inside cat, actually. He was not. He had not been trained to be an inside cat before we had him. He was outside most of the time. In fact, he would go on a day or two. We know where he was. Whenever the weather would get bad or whenever you come to the door, even the weather was good, he always wanted to come in. I don't care. Always wanted to come in.
Yeah.
Didn't matter.
And if you don't know Steve Longenecker, we had a strict no cats in the house policy.
No cats in the house policy.
No animals.
No animals. Yeah,
no animals, right. Period. That's right. Maybe especially cats at that point.
Yeah.
So Thomas and I didn't always get along. Let's just put it that way.
I think my favorite part, you may have a specific part that you're getting to this about this, that cat, if there was one person that cat hated.
Yeah.
It would have been me.
Yeah.
He hated it. And it's funny, too, because like if you try to tell that story to someone, they'd be like, oh, well, you know, it's probably then just like, you know, something dad is doing. It's like dad did nothing to Thomas. Nothing. Like absolutely. No interactions, nothing like that.
None.
And it's like this cat willingly it's, I think it's what makes the story like so great, just to me, you know, like
it is
because it's like he sought out someone to hate.
Proof positive. Yes. You guys were gone. I'm feeding the cat, trying to take care of Thomas, because I know y'all wanted to take good care of Thomas. So we're out on the back deck. I'm feeding the cat. Again, nobody else is around. You're gone for somewhere. I don't know where you were.
Oh, I'm sure Florida. Yeah,
probably. Put the food up there for Thomas to eat. Thomas comes over, and in front of me, literally in front of me, takes his paw and swats the bowl right off the top. Right in front of me. Not because I had done anything except put the food there. It was the food he usually had. It was
And that, when we talk about he hated you, was literally thinking, it feels like in that moment, he's thinking like, how can I make him the most mad?
Yeah, exactly.
And guess what? It worked.
That's why to me, it's so funny. Because like I said, you tell that kind of thing to somebody now and they're like, oh, well, you know, maybe you just don't have the right attitude towards cats. And it's like, I literally cannot express enough the fact that it had absolutely nothing to do with any of that.
From day one,
he just hated dad.
He did,
and
didn't have anything to do with me.
And he liked the rest of us pretty well. I guess.
Yeah, he did.
He and our dog, who we brought to the house. We got her while we lived the dog that we got, Lucy, they interacted great. They would like nap on the porch, whatever. Yeah. This cat could get along with a dog like that was like 10 times its size, but not dad.
All I will say is when he swatted the food off, I will not repeat what happened next.
Yeah.
Because I want to be sure the statute of limitations have run out.
Thomas lived after that day.
We're
just going to put it that way.
He did, and was not maimed in any kind of way. No. But I did respond in that moment. And let's just say, I don't remember ever feeding the cat again.
Yeah, it was our response.
Yeah,
it was
your responsibility. Yeah, it had to be.
Oh, man, you can't top that.
No. No, that's a great one. We have a dog now who, I mean, she digs like caves in our backyard. She's a Belgian Malinois, which, if you're not familiar, and most people aren't, they get mistaken for German Shepherds all the time. They look like German Shepherds, but they're really friendly, and they're more like a family dog than a German Shepherd would be. So people see her, they get scared because they think she's a German Shepherd. She might be aggressive, whatever, that kind of stuff. She's not, but she digs. And we'll have somebody to come to the house to look at the AC unit, and they're like, what's going on in the back? Like, or somebody comes out. We have a guy that like does our gutter, cleans out our gutters really cheap. We got some tall spots on our house, whatever. And he's like, he'll say something to me, or has said something to me after. It's like, man, what kind of dog you got? A digger. So that's the craziest thing we're dealing with right now. And honestly, it's a bummer because we have two young kids, and our backyard is just like has been caverned.
Yeah. So if they're playing in the backyard and you can't see them,
one of the kids could be running across the backyard and boom, disappear.
Cannot see the kid.
Or I guess she kind of digs at an angle, so you don't. Yeah. Really, it's not really a pit; you wouldn't fall in, but just kind of run right. Kid could just kind of run right into it. That's wild.
I've seen the backyard. If the kid goes in there, they're probably not coming out.
They ain't coming
not
out.
By themselves.
I didn't know. We got a lot of like rock formations up here where we live. I didn't know you could dig that deep.
I wish we had a little more rock in our backyard. That'd be nice. Maybe she couldn't do it.
I heard that.
Well, I know we're going to point like right back to you because... For the next story, and Eric, I don't know if you want to take.
No, you're good.
If you want to go from here, you had a sheep growing up.
Just get right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Strange story.
Before you start that, like, if there's any context or detail, like, whose idea
How does one obtain a sheep?
Obviously there are people who have like lots of sheep or something like that. Yeah. You know, to my knowledge, you had a single sheep, right?
Yes, correct.
Why? Why? Whose idea?
I have no earthly idea. I have tried to recollect that, and I can't.
You think about regret of things that you could have talked to someone about before they were gone. Our grandfather passed away not too long ago. Should have had that conversation with him. Would he have?
I do remember this part. The sheep was all black. And it was a part of twins. It was there were two lambs born to a mother sheep. I guess that's what, I don't know what you call mother sheep, but anyhow, we didn't know then either. We didn't have a farm. We were on 2 acres of land, but we didn't have a farm. We had no place to put a sheep. We had to, but somehow or another, this lamb was not accepted by the mom. And therefore, somehow we heard about it, needed somewhere to go. I don't remember who that was that had it. I don't remember the farmer or the persons that did it. But my uncle had a hog farm, but he didn't have any sheep, so it wasn't him who was in the same town. So I'm not sure how I got here, except I know that it was rejected, and so there was somebody who was going to have to raise it from little.
Gotcha.
And we did. So we got the lamb when it was very, very small.
That still doesn't...
pitch dark.
That still doesn't explain how y'all ended up with it. Because I'm trying to imagine my grandfather and my grandmother openly saying, yeah, let's raise this sheep.
That's what doesn't make sense about this story. Because the only other animals that we've ever had were dogs, pretty much. So I don't even know if we really had cats. I know we had dogs.
I don't really remember telling any cats.
We always had dogs. We always had dogs. Yeah. And I always liked having dogs. Now, you know, dogs were off leashes. We're not in pens. Oh, yeah. We're not inside dogs in that little small country town. So.
Okay, so...
But here's the sheep.
Do you remember... Did y'all have it from birth to death?
Yeah. But now death was shipping it off to be mutton chops.
Oh.
I remember now watching the sheep leave the house because the meat packaging plant that was going to take it came and got it. And so I had become attached.
It's like a different sugarcoat it for you,
no
did
sugar
they?
Coating whatsoever.
There was no farm you were sending it to.
No, there was nothing. I'm watching. I can still, that's crazy.
R.I.P.
At my age, I can still see that lamb being taken off in that truck. It's weird, man.
That is I didn't haunting. I didn't know the end of that.
By the way. We got $15 for it.
I guess that was probably a big deal.
I was thinking about that today. We got $15 for it.
Well, no, now, like, what would that relate to now? Like a few hundred dollars?
I don't
know. Not even?
No, not even.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
Wow.
$15 is what we got for it because the animal became uncontrollable to keep by themselves. That's part of the reason it was time to move it on. And so the way to do it was instead of just putting it to death at a shelter or something, you would back then, because there was livestock of all kinds that were raised and then sold because cattle were very, very important in that economy.
That still doesn't soften the blow for a young child.
It does not. It does not. And I'm in therapy behind it. And I wonder, maybe this will help. I'm hoping that maybe they're telling the story, man. But. Oh, by the way, you might know that the name of the sheep was Midnight. The name of the sheep was Midnight.
That's a great name for a black sheep.
Yeah, actually, it is.
Yeah.
And actually, a very good-looking sheep. I mean, like, this sheep was not, you know, it was very well-developed as sheep. What do you mean? It grew so well that it became very difficult to keep it contained.
Mm. Okay, so I know you're a little kid, and so it's kind of hard to like process because you know, obviously, everything seems bigger at that when you're little. But like, give us an idea, like, Size wise, like how can we compare this? Okay, so for people who aren't watching, that's like definitely larger than most large dogs.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, bigger than a large dog. Yeah, and certainly much more full and fat. Had wool, black wool,
right.
All black wool, and so very distinctive animal. Very distinctive animal, and well liked by us in many cases. You know what I'm saying? Now, not so much the parents. This as is, much as the kid.
Yeah. Is this another... Did he have a thing with your dad?
I don't know for sure. It's okay. Possible.
I was going to say, was this his Thomas?
The one story that we have involves my dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's where I would get the theme, chasing sheep at midnight. True story. Chasing midnight at midnight.
Yeah. Even all better.
Right. So here... I've heard this story specifically from my mom. I was in the house when it happened, but it was at midnight, and I was asleep. And my mom, though, she told it to us. And my mother, who was not really much of a storyteller, told this story, and she told it very, very well. And it was actually very, very funny. I never heard my dad, who had a great sense of humor, mm-hmm. I never saw him haw-hawing a lot about this story, but Mom did, and the rest of us did. And as I think back on it, the pictures in my mind are unbelievable. So this is how Mom tells it. Mm-hmm. The sheep got out one night, apparently, from whatever pen had, and it wasn't a very tight pen, so he got out and apparently started running around the house at midnight.
So the way she tells it, just like lapping the house?
Apparently.
Okay.
And for sure after my dad got out there to catch the animal and put it back, that's when the laps really began. And here's where the story gets real, real interesting per what my mom said. My mom said that first she knew that Dad had put his house coat on over his pajamas, and going out at midnight. Now, we didn't have lights really around that very much, so there was not much out there. And she could hear Dad starting to go after the sheep. And she could hear that the sheep started running around this rectangular block house in South Georgia at midnight. And she said they ran around once. You could hear the sheep, and then here comes Dad.
Yeah,
now, Dad's 5'5". He's not a big guy, but he's, you know, he's pretty strong dude.
And he was still pretty young at this age.
He's young. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's very young. And so Mom said that they came around once, and then they came around twice. And her words is, the more they came around, the madder she knew he was getting. Oh, yeah. Now, my dad was not a man of great anger. I mean, he didn't demonstrate his anger. But she presented the picture of, by this time, she's looking out the window and she sees them as they go by with midnight running ahead of Dad, him running behind her as hard as he can and can't catch her. She was pretty fast, by the way. Couldn't catch her immediately. And his house coat is now flying out behind him. In almost like a Superman pose, apparently. And they're going round and round. And all Mom would say about it is she said, I knew that every round they made around the house, he was going to be angrier and angrier and angrier. Now, the truth be told, he caught him. I don't know what happened after that, except that I don't think it was like many, many months after that that this sheep then went for mutton chops, we call
it. It must have been, it must not have been much after that.
Much after that. Because it appeared that our days of having this very beautiful sheep, actually, was going to be impossible. Now, one thing I learned then, though, even as a small kid, is sheep are not the smartest animals.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think, like, it's pretty impressive, I feel like, that he caught...
I know.
That he caught. Have y'all seen the one that it went around for a while where this sheep got like stuck in this ditch?
And these guys
get him out.
Took forever.
Forever to get him out. They get him out and he immediately starts bounce, like zooming down. Bounce, 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 boom, gets stuck in the ditch again. But like to me, like, when I saw that though, you're like, I didn't realize that they're seriously mobile. Like and very
mobile.
So to me, I'm like, man, that he caught him.
Here's what do know.
Maybe he did something dumb that allowed him to get caught.
I don't remember the specifics of how he caught him. All I know is, had he not caught him, they would still be running around that house.
Yeah.
That's the persistence and the focus my dad had on any issue like that.
Well, good for him. I mean, I can relate to like that a little bit. I've had, even our family dog that we had growing up, Lucy. She wanted to be free roaming all the time. Yes. And we, I mean, even out there, you know, we didn't live in the country, but, you know, kind of definitely out of the city and at the back end of a cul-de-sac with not many other houses around. And so we did let her have her free time. Some, I think,
and
we,
she was gone.
Yeah.
You let her out of that pen.
Yeah.
Boy, she,
yeah, she would
gone.
Just absolutely take off. And I would remember when there would be times I don't remember too many, but when mom telling us, that we needed to go corral her or something like that. Right. 'Cause there had been a time or two where like, you know, animal control would occasionally make some rounds and be like, "Hey, you got to put your dog up," you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so I remember then there being a period of time where we had to be more responsible for making sure she was like, you know, in wherever she needed to be. Yeah. And, just like impossible to catch. And I have a dog now, her name's Jersey, who she's gotten a lot older now, but when I first got her,
oh boy, I remember
she was she's still a lightning rod, but she had, and I can't explain it other than if you've had a dog like this, you just kind of know. And we would be, When I first lived at downstairs at my I lived with mom and dad for a few months of having her, and as she got a little bit older, I moved in with my sister and brother-in-law, and they didn't have a fenced-in backyard, and so I would take her out outside, and just some one night out of the blue, who knows when it would be, she would just look, she would be across the yard. She'd usually run around. She'd run a ton of circles and, you know, play and all that kind of stuff and do great. And then we would go back inside. But every now and then she would look at me from across the yard and like, just kind of like freeze, you know, it was like, oh, and I'm like, "Hey, Jersey, come on, you know, time to go in." No, you know, and then nothing. And you're like, "Here we go." and it's like, you know, I had my wife now was my girlfriend back then. And so I was often like, you know, getting back to the house at like, you know, 10:30, whatever, even on a weeknight. And so letting her out, and it'd be like, you know, 10:45, everybody else was trying to sleep. And you get that look and you're just like, "Oh man, I like should have left a leash on her or something." Just absolutely cannot corral them. It's just wild. So yeah, I can relate to that a little bit. Although I can imagine like, and I never really did have to like chase her much. I usually just had to follow her. But I can imagine like if you're doing in grandpa's position.
Well, here's one thing about sheep that's different from other animals. They don't follow commands.
That's true.
Like dogs, you can train them, but sheep not like that. Sheep actually have to be herded, and they have to be that. And so when I later on, as a pastor, heard them people talking about how Jesus looked at us as sheep, I'm thinking, oh boy.
Yeah.
Because they don't follow commands very well. Yep. They have to be directed and guided. And, you know, you can just say to midnight now, "Stop and come here." You know, That sheep was not going to respond that way. Mm-hmm. And so now here we go in ministry and I'm hearing, "Oh, we're sheep," or "I'm a pastor as a shepherd." And so I think, oh my goodness. And so I go back to that experience over and over again to make sense sometimes out of what I'm experiencing with people who God calls sheep.
Mm-hmm. It's also too, like if you go back, that it was the immediate thing that I thought about when you talked about them not knowing commands. Obviously I don't think that comparison was made on accident. You know, it wasn't something that we just came across, but you know, think about too, why shepherds were there
and like they were without a shepherd, they were so exposed and so in danger. Like something could come and just gut it. I mean, you would, I don't know what,
like, but sheep without a shepherd, you hear it over and over. You hear that phrase without over and over. And with Midnight and the experience with her, I mean, what I think my dad was most concerned about, you couldn't just leave that animal out.
Yeah.
Like, had it been a dog or a cat, you may say, well, they'll be okay until morning.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason with sheep that he couldn't do that was because we lived near a highway, and Midnight would have wandered out anywhere, could have easily been killed. Now, any animal can be when they're, but sheep would have been particularly sensitive to that. And that's why I think, I don't know this, but I think that's why Dad spent so much time trying to catch that animal that night, because he thought if he did not do so, we may never see that animal alive again.
Yeah.
I'm quite sure of that.
Yeah. And I think it's an interesting, you kind of mentioned the parallel there. It's like almost off the cuff, it kind of sounds like, well, not kind of, but it sounds like a bit of an insult, you know, to be compared, you know, compared to sheep.
By it.
Right. You know, to be compared to sheep.
To be compared to Midnight,
right?
Yeah, I'm kind of. But I wonder if God's ever been chasing me around the house at midnight.
Absolutely. Maybe. You know, and I think it's funny too. It's like that's one of the. It's not funny, but it, you know, it's interesting too. That's like one of the most. I mean, there's a lot of things you could list on this, but like one of them can be one of the most painful parts of ministry, you know, is when you feel like you're in that chasing mode after somebody and it's just not happening. You know, I'm not, we could talk, all day about whether or not, you know, God always wants us to just chase people down. But, you know, I think sometimes he does ask us to do that. And you know, we're certainly responsible for, for people in that kind of way, to some extent. And it's just like that feeling of like, this isn't, they're not going to stop running. Like Midnight's not going to stop running.
Well, you know, what was interesting too, I thought about that and thought about, I don't know if I've heard about rebellious sheep very much.
Hmm.
You know, like Thomas seemed to be to me like,
yeah,
I'm going to do it right in your face. Mm-hmm. I never got that impression when we were raising Midnight, that Midnight was doing some of the stupid stuff that she was doing, even as a little lamb and then as a grown sheep. I never got the sense that she was rebellious. It was a female, that she was rebellious. I just got more the sense he was lost.
Yeah,
I wonder what that says about.
I think you have that consistent behavior across, because you could have had 9 or 9, 10 other cats that never ever would have done anything that to you.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? But like with sheep, it's like, it's just that consistent behavior of that we see as, you know, dumb or stupid or something like that. But it's really like, it's who they are. Mm-hmm. Like that's all that they
they're lost.
That's what they are.
They're more lost than they are anything else.
And so I think that kind of points back to why that comparison was made, is, you know, who we are without what God's done for us, without, you know, the Lord is my shepherd, you know, the behavior is pretty consistent.
Yeah.
And sheep are not hard to like. I learned that through Midnight. They're not hard to like. You could cuddle up to them quick. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You can do that. You can, you know, you have a sense of being, when you're around them, of in the right sense as a kid, kind of a cuddly feeling. I don't know, you can have that with some other animals too, but it seemed like with sheep, it's even something different. It's like I never worried about so much about, well, you know, is Midnight going to be prepared to embrace me today? You know what I'm saying? You know, that kind of thing. Or is Midnight going to say, get out of my life today? Not going to happen. She might wander off. She might do some stuff that's kind of irritating and annoying, but not necessarily rebellious. And that's one thing I learned about it. So chasing sheep at midnight is something I've done in ministry.
Yeah.
And I have found, just like that story, that wonderful story of how there was one sheep that was lost in that parable, in the story of the script, in the scripture, that one sheep that was lost, and the shepherd left the 99 that were okay and went out and found the one. Hey, wow. I don't know what happened right there. But it's a really cool story about my dad was not concerned about any other sheep or any other animal. He was worried about that when it was out there wandering around the house, and he had to go get him.
Yeah.
And if it meant running around the house in your robe, go ahead and do it. And will other people think you're foolish for doing it? Maybe.
Yeah.
Will other people laugh at you for doing it? Maybe.
Will it be a good story down the line?
Will other people tell you that it's a waste of time? Maybe.
Yeah. Will it hurt you?
It might.
Yeah. That's what
it may hurt you in the way that you feel helpless sometimes to help. I think that I felt sometimes helpless to help my midnight.
So then where do you, because a lot of people have a lot of experience with this, not necessarily chasing actual sheep. So where does peace come from?
Peace comes from doing that.
When it's something that just can't be, you know, like how do you reconcile all of those things that can, you know, all the hurt, you know, and everything else that you mentioned?
Because think about it, like we're not perfect shepherds, right? So we know Jesus as the perfect shepherd. So he's not going to lose anybody that he's going after. Sure. We have lost people that we've gone after. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of like what you're saying. Like,
exactly.
How do you come back from that hurt, and how do you make it to where, you know, the pain of, you know, the one lost or the one that you just can't catch, how do you keep that from affecting your persistence in with the
I next? Think it's that you have to learn how sometimes to deal with loss, a sense of loss in yourself, and that could be an emotional, relational loss. You know, you get attached to people, just like as I told you the story about watching that midnight drive away, and that because it was decided that no longer would we be shepherds to that sheep. Yeah. And when I think about that, there's loss, and I'm not sure that there's any cure for it, but it is important. One thing that I have said before is, you guys have heard me say this before, is that one of the things I've learned in 40 something years of ministry is, as one young lady from China, she's a believer from China who was at a Regions Bank, and one day she looked at me after 37 years of ministry. Your mom and I were in the bank talking business with her, and she said, "Oh, you've been a pastor." She said, "Well, tell me, what's the most important thing you've learned in 37 years of ministry?" Nobody ever asked me that question, and I was taken back. I'm in a bank, right?
Great question, by the way.
And all of a sudden, I had this impression, and I said, "I believe it's that I've learned to deal with disappointment and the loss that comes with disappointment." Mm-hmm. And your mom was sitting next to me, knows me better than anybody. And she looked at this lady and she said, that's true. I believe what he's saying is one of the most important lessons he's learned. And I've watched him learn it. And I think in that moment, it was an aha moment for me, is that sometimes the way you deal with that hurt is to learn how to deal with loss. Mm-hmm. And to realize that with loss comes grief. And when when you're able to process that grief, then it's an important thing to do, is to acknowledge the grief that you feel, of your disappointment, of the lostness that you sense in somebody else, and then move on. And because sometimes the sheep wander off and do by themselves, and they wander off, and there's nothing you can do to capture them back. And so I've learned not only how to deal with loss, but not run after to the ends of the earth from a human perspective, the human sheep, if they choose to wander down a different path and no longer want to be a part of you assisting them. Yeah. There's nothing you can do. There's a loss there too. But sometimes you have to focus and say, was it worth it? Well, I'm not sure. But I don't have to be.
Right. Yeah.
I have to do what I've been told to do, and that is to be a shepherd of the sheep and to do the very best I can, and then to say, leave the results up to God.
Mm. Absolutely.
That's so hard to do.
It is.
That's one of the cliche, easier said than done.
Absolutely. That absolutely
fits really well right there.
Absolutely.
Cause that's just, you get so, like you said, you get so invested, even, I mean, sometimes just from a time perspective too.
You think you've done so much, or, you know, like you said, spent so much time that I can't let it all go to waste. You know, I think going back to what you said there, you kind of have, at some points we kind of just have to sit back and trust God and say, you know, okay, I may never know that time that I put in wasn't wasted, but I'm counting on you to, you know, to bring it on home and see that it wasn't.
And to remember those times that even though the end result was not what you hoped for, that you can look back on the times, just like the running around the yard at midnight, and with a sense of humor, you go, you know what? There was joy in that moment. Mm-hmm. Even though it didn't end the way we wanted it to, there was joy in that moment. So you remember that moment. And that's one way I deal with grief, is I do it with a sense of humor. Not ridiculous, corny humor, but with a sense of humor to be able to look back and say, wow, that's something, man. And I do it in my experience as a pastor. I've done it in my experiences in prison. When I go back and there's stories in prison that didn't always end well, not all the sheep in there, their story ended well, but I can still go back to some of the stories of what happened there. And we'll do that on some later episodes, where we'll talk about some of those stories, because those sheep would wander really fast. So sometimes, but at the same time, we could still take a look at looking back. And so I can look back at midnight, and while the end result of seeing her pull away in a truck is not what I wanted as a kid, I still remember with joy the fact that we raised a kid, we were able to interact with a kid. And so maybe one thing to say is, another way is, not just with a sense of humor and look for the joy in what did happen with that sheep, but number two, what are lessons learned in that interaction? Mm-hmm. And that has helped me a lot to say, what did I learn, either positively or negatively, for the next time or just for my own personal life?
Yeah, and so much of it too, even, and we're not just talking about, you know, actual sheep now here, but like you said, some of them can sometimes feel wasteful. Mm-hmm. But I think you point back to what you said about learning how. Mm-hmm. And I think if you don't have, you know, learning how to deal, you never learn how to deal with disappointment if there's no disappointment.
That's right.
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 That's right.
I mean, you can't learn to be courageous if you're never given a situation to be courageous in. Right. I mean, so it's kind of one of those things where trying to look back on, it's the same thing about failure, you know, I mean,
yes.
So many parallels you could draw from that.
And the universal human condition always includes some disappointment.
Yeah.
Every time. No matter what you're involved in, it's not just ministry.
There's a great line from one of the bands that I've been listening to recently, is Judah and the Lion, and they have a song, one of the lines in it that has really stuck with me lately. It says, I don't butcher this line, but it says, stories without a few letdowns are boring when told. Mm. And that's not, you know, it's not all about like having good, fun stories, right. But I think like it's like that is literally like life. You know, you have these letdowns, but it's always a part of, we hope that it's a part of something bigger and better down the line.
And that even though there was disappointment, that it's still later a story, you know, in the case of that, it's like, it's still a story to be told.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, or it's still a moment to be celebrated, you know, or to be well thought of.
And, yeah.
Well, there's a guy that we say we follow named Jesus who had 12 folks that were sheep, and some of them were a mess. In fact, all of them were a mess. And by the time, at the moment he needed them the most, he looked up and they were nowhere around. Mm-hmm. They were sleeping while he was preparing to die. They disappeared when they hung him on the cross. They did all that. So what I know is the scripture that says he was despised and rejected of man, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. and we hid as though it were our faces from him. It's interesting to me that we would say we would hide our faces from him. And I think that's because we don't really, we think we don't, that disappointment, that loss, that sorrow, that grief is something we want to avoid. However, a life that avoids all that is a life that usually ends up in all kinds of addictions. I feel better. And there's not anybody who really does anything good that much to anybody else. But the person who does understand loss and disappointment enjoys the wins even more.
Hmm. Yeah. That's good.
Absolutely. I love it. And I just thinking about that, you're talking about Jesus and the disciples, and the lyrics that you said, and he's like, and that story certainly has some letdowns.
Yeah.
It is not boring.
No.
So you should check that one out if you haven't. But it's honestly true. And I love that parallel. And it's not just a story. It's something that really happened, and he did it. And, I'm grateful for, because of that, is why we're here, together. It's why we enjoy telling stories about, Midnight and Thomas and, you know, and Lucy and all that kind of stuff. And drawing, you know, drawing a line from pets to what Jesus does in ministry and all that kind of stuff is amazing to be able to do that. And it's a lot of fun. So, as always, I'm Eric. That's Derek. Steve, our man with the plan, is Chris. This has been The Preacher in the Hat. We'll see you next time.